The thing I would say is that my why has changed throughout the years in coaching. I think that's a common thing. I think when you're 22 and 23 and 24 years old, you're kind of torn between, one, you don't want to give the game up and this is a way to stay in it, and two, you just want to win. And, 10 years later, I certainly still want to win, but I think that the thing that I've recognized more in coaching is that personal development of the players has become a huge priority. And how do you get the things that you're doing every single day to be something that player can take with them for the rest of their life? That's something that's changing as far as the why goes.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
Broadcasting from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, welcome back to our show, and thank you for staying dialed into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. Grab you some pond here in the dugout. Join in on this great conversation. This is the podcast for personal growth junkie coaches who can't get enough knowledge. They're always out seeking new viewpoints, always challenging themselves to advance and grow. And if that describes you, welcome to Dugout Chatter. We appreciate you joining the convo. Now, we are 5 days into a brand new membership year here at the American Baseball Coaches Association, and over 1,200 coaches from around the world have jumped on board with us. They've joined the world's largest baseball coaches fraternity, and even registration for our national convention in Indianapolis. Looking ahead to January 4th to the 7th is live, coaches. We're talking about 4 days of baseball heaven. It's the world's largest gathering of baseball coaches. It's the world's largest baseball trade show with over 300 exhibitors. There's 25 clinics on the main stage, another 20 inside our expo theater. Learning and networking opportunities are everywhere. It's a can't-miss opportunity for any baseball coach or enthusiast. And we're going to give you more information about how you and your staff can get signed up at the end of the show. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Now, with today's episode, we connect with another terrific young coach inside the ABCA and out there growing our game. Eddie Smith, the head coach at Lower Columbia College in Longview, Washington, grabs a bucket to join our show. Watching Eddie for a long time, and this dude is an absolute winner. He's coming up as an assistant at Virginia and going to the World Series a few times, on to Santa Clara and Notre Dame, and now what he's done at Lower Columbia. He has contributed to winning seasons and championships all along the way, but especially there for the Red Devils at Lower Columbia, leading such a storied program back to prominence. They've won two of the last three NWAC championships and three straight West Region crowns. Now, this is a fun interview, man. There's terrific, positive, great energy on the line for you guys. Coaches listening in are going to love to hear Eddie's mantra of win anyway and the details behind that. Plus, we get Coach Smith to go in depth on the many lessons he's learned throughout his career, and there are just some absolute powerful messages for you guys in there, some certified audio gold, if you will, that I know are going to hit home with you all. Plus, we share some pretty funny stories. We even get our very first Spanish dialogue on the air inside the show with Eddie Smith. We are breaking down the walls on this podcast, so sit back and relax, coaches. Pop in the earbuds. Connect with Lower Columbia head coach Eddie Smith on today's Dugout Chatter episode, and get ready because this great show is coming at you right now. For today's interview, guys, we are heading out to the Pacific Northwest. We are heading to Longview, Washington, as we're connecting with the head coach at Lower Columbia College, Eddie Smith. Eddie, thanks for being on the call with us today.
Thanks, Chief. It's great being here.
We're excited to have you on, man. A loyal ABCA guy throughout the years. And I think that's where we want to start this interview, man, as we get into your experience inside the association, what it's meant to you, your growth as a coach. Can you talk through some of that for us?
Yeah, the first time I really remember being involved with the ABCA was my second year coaching. The convention was at in Philadelphia, and I was at the University of Virginia at the time, and drove up and was there for the weekend, and it was my first experience at the event, and I remember taking a lot away. That was very much formative years of my coaching career, and I think I've been to five conventions since, and it's always a great time to go learn from some of the game's best, and you can learn about team building, you can learn about specific drills different positions. You can learn about life. You know, I think the talk at the ABCA convention that I remember the most is the late Don Meyer in Anaheim. It was in 2012. Yep. And actually went out and bought the CD for that one, and still have it and still will pop it in from time to time. He was just an amazing speaker. And, you know, you can just go down the list of guys that put on great great presentations during that event. Really, really good piece for any coach out there trying to get better.
That Don Meyer speech, man, he just gave me chills, because that was one, and you could even listen to it today. It'll help you keep things in perspective as you approach coaching your guys, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, to be honest with you, it's one of those things at the convention that, yeah, you have the speaker that you kind of highlight, and, you know, maybe you're going in and out of having lunch with a friend from the other side of the country, or this, that, and the other. And I'll be honest with you, I'll never forget it. I got to Don Meyer's speech maybe 10 minutes into it because I was excited to hear the next guy. And with all respect to Don Meyer,
sure,
I didn't know who he was at the time. And I sat there mesmerized for the next 35 or 40 minutes saying, this guy's got it figured out. And ironically, he was actually a basketball coach at the time.
He started
his career as a baseball coach, but it turned into a basketball coach by that point, and just gave really good life lessons about the importance of coaching, and I'll never forget it.
It's powerful. Now, we want to dive into your history. I think giving our listeners a platform to start from and know where you've come from, I'm just going to sum it up like this, guys. I've connected with Eddie over the last couple of years and just really enjoy watching him travel all over the country, enjoy what he's done from the coaching end. 12 seasons in, man, dude, you're a winner. Everywhere you've been, the team to win. You're always in tournaments, obviously a couple World Series appearances, the NWAC championships, all that great stuff. But I want you to walk us through all that from the first year into coaching and bring us up to what's going on right there at the big chair at Lower Columbia.
Yeah, you know, my start in coaching came right after I finished playing college baseball. I got hired to be the director of baseball operations at the University of Virginia. Eventually became an assistant there. I spent 5 total years in Charlottesville. From there, I went to Santa Clara University. And then from there, I went to the University of Notre Dame, and was an assistant coach at both stops. And then I got hired to be the head coach here at Lower Columbia College. And I've been here for 5 years now, and I call Longview home.
That's awesome. Done a heck of a job since you've been there. Going to your 5th season, man. 3 straight West Region titles, 2 of the last 3 NWAC championships. Talk to us about what's going on there at LCC. What's the situation like on campus, within the program? Been a ton of success, but take us inside the locker room of what's going on inside your program.
Well, you know, I think the program has just a really, really strong history. If you look back at it, since 1970, the Lower Columbia College baseball program has played in 25 of the last 48 NWAC championship games and have won 12 of them.
Wow.
And so, I think we've gained a lot of respect out here in the Northwest.
That's right.
As the top junior college baseball program. And, you know, we've got plenty of attention at the national level as well, which is pretty exciting. And so, you know, that foundation has been here a long time. We have a really, really cool town where sports are still sort of the center of the community.
Mm-hmm.
We have about 50,000 people total between Longview and Kelso, which are 2 adjoining towns here in rural Southwest Washington. And the cool thing about Lower Columbia College is, you know, you come out to our ball games and the newspaper's out there, and after the game, they're interviewing our players, and the next day there's a color picture on the front page of the newspaper and on the sports page, and all of our games are broadcast live on YouTube. And the community cares. You walk around town, and you know, our players would go to the grocery store after practice, and you know, people would be asking them, hey, how's the team doing? They might not know who these people are, but the people know who they are as players in our program. So it's a really neat experience for guys to come to. Our roster is made up probably about 80% from guys from Washington and Oregon, but you know, we'll take them from wherever it may be. We actually have 2 Australians in our program right now. Last year's team had 3 players from Hawaii. And we'll always have a couple of California and Idaho guys in the roster. So, you know, that gives you a look at where our recruiting base comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, facilities-wise, we've got it really good. We just finished a project last year that put a full turf infield on our field, which it's a game changer in our climate.
Sure.
We get plenty of plenty of drizzle in the Northwest, and you never have to worry about putting tarp on the field anymore, which is great. And about 3 years ago, we finished a $7.5 million fitness center weight room that's 30 yards from our right field foul pole.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's a great place for our guys to go work out. We're in there all the time in the mornings working out as a team. And, you know, I think for the player development piece, we've got it dialed in to have the best facilities for our guys for that.
And we were just talking before we got recording, listeners, walking into tonight with this first team meeting and approaching his brand new teams, talking through a little bit of what to expect, some competition in some different spots. And Eddie, let's go just a tad off script here real quick and we'll get back to it. But I'm interested, and I think our coaches listening in would be as well. Could you talk through maybe the culture that's in place, or what are the maybe the pillars or staples of the program that you've put in place that obviously have propelled you guys to taking home championships?
The biggest thing for me is that, you know, I noticed a lot early on in the first year being here, there was a little bit of a culture of excuse making. And it was, there were just a lot of reasons why people couldn't get the job done. And we weren't great in that first season. There's a little bit of a roller coaster up and down, not the consistency that we work and strive for. So one thing that I did a lot of research on that summer and try to get that consistency was just having a foundation kind of that you talk about. And the thing that we came up with was win anyway as a theme.
That's awesome.
And we have it printed on our uniforms or our undershirts and a lot of the gear that we have. We have a big sign in our dugout that says that. And it's basically our answer to everything that we do. And, you know, it's our way of saying no excuses with a positive spin on it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a concept and a way of life that our team has embraced, our program's embraced. And what I always tell the guys is it applies to anything. You know, it could certainly apply to the field where, you know, down by a run in the ninth inning, we went into that situation four times last year, and miraculously we were 4-0 in those situations last year. And that was a pretty cool thing. You know, I always tell guys, hey, for weights in the morning, we start at 7:15. Your job is to be there at 7:15. I always tell the guys that, you know, if you live a mile away, if you leave at 7 o'clock and your car doesn't start, you can jog that mile and you're still on time if you leave at 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. If you jog and you're there, that's winning anyway. You know, it works in the classroom, finding that way to get the job done without any excuses. And, you know, I hope it's a skill that our players can take on with them. They still play baseball at the four-year level as they go on in their lives, you know, become employees, husbands, fathers, and, you know, no matter what it may be that they're doing, you know, that no excuses, win anyway attitude, something I hope they take with them.
You walked right in my spider web, man. That's exactly the follow-up if you didn't get to it. I think that's such a cool dynamic. I love the fact you get all the details out inside that for our guys listening in. So let's get back on the script because I think there's so much that we want to cover. And again, using these Dugout Chatter episodes to highlight guys like yourself, Eddie, that have been loyal and proud to be part of our association. Again, we kick up membership, staring down Friday, September 1st, working tomorrow. This is right into our release on Tuesday. But I think when we look at your career and all your different stops, man, you're looking at Virginia to Santa Clara to Notre Dame to now Lower Columbia. I want you to take each and every spot, those four spots, and pull out a lesson for our listeners that you learned at each spot that have certainly impacted you, but you've held on to and continue to help you even today.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think looking back at the time in Virginia, it was a situation where I got to see a program grow and explode. I think in the time there, it went from being about 2,500 in capacity at the stadium to over 5,000. Mm-hmm. And selling out at over 5,000 was a pretty neat thing. And I would say the thing that I learned there was how to manage a program. You know, I got to work really closely with Coach O'Connor and see him manage every little detail of the program and the importance of all those details in the program. I mean, there was nothing that was beneath Coach O'Connor. He would be willing to drag the field, water the field, walk a 10-year-old kid and his dad around the facilities because they showed up for a game that the game eventually got rained out and the kid was disappointed that he didn't get to see the game, and Coach wanted to make sure he still got a good experience. you know, all the way to certainly going and raising millions of dollars to fund these stadium expansions. And, you know, to see the importance of the details within a program and to see that program grow and grow the way that it did. And what I think was because of the attention to the details, it was amazing. You know, I think at Santa Clara, a couple things I learned was one is I got a lot of experience recruiting on the West Coast, which was important then. And now it's certainly important with where I am and establishing those recruiting ties. I was in the Northwest recruiting a lot when I was at Santa Clara. I was in Southern California and just getting to meet a lot of people in the baseball world and make those connections from the recruiting standpoint was big. And, you know, one other thing along the way that I think I learned there was the value of communicating with today's players in multiple medias. Okay. And that's evolved so much. I think, you know, being able to show videos, being able to have catchphrases like win anyway, being able to, you know, if you're fortunate enough to be able to get a shirt or two a year that you can custom design that the team needs a different message on it. I think that's an amazing way to communicate with players in this era.
Sure.
Like it, love it or hate it. It is different than it was 10 or 20 years ago. And, I think I really had my eyes open to that when I was at Santa Clara as far as the way to do that. And, you know, you can still maintain your foundation of a program, but you can do it more powerfully and more effectively with using different medias to get to the players. You know, I think Notre Dame, my time there, it's a magical place. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to play baseball at Notre Dame and get my degree from the university. So to get to go back there and coach, I think, you know, for me personally, it was a good place to grow as a person. The type of person that you're around at the University of Notre Dame is just unbelievable. You have some of the most decorated high school, not just baseball players, but also people on that campus. And so to be surrounded by greatness, essentially, not just on the baseball field, but everywhere you walk around that campus, it's a special feeling. And, you know, you can't help but be kind of elevated. Personally, just when you're surrounded by people like that. And then, you know, I would say that, you know, working for Coach Aoki, that it was a really good experience. He really let me go out and coach as an assistant coach. Felt a lot of responsibility, which was a great thing. You know, I had a group of players that I worked with a lot. We grew really close and, you know, really got to spend a lot of time with those players, and it was a great experience there. And then, you know, I'll tell you here, once you put the head coaching hat on, it's a whole different world.
That's a fact.
You know, you go from being a guy who works on recruiting and works with player development. You know, if you're fortunate enough to work in a program where the coach trusts you, maybe you're making a few decisions as the head coach. I think what I've learned here is, you know, everything that happens within your program essentially is your responsibility and is a reflection upon yourself. And so, you know, those decisions have to be so thought out. They're not always going to make the right decision, but I think it's something where you always want to make sure that you put a lot of thought into it, that, you know, you have a reason behind your decision, and they're not all going to work out perfectly. And that's part of it. But, you know, having a reason behind your decision is the biggest thing that I've always found to be most effective in being a head coach, and you know, sticking by that decision and adjusting when you need to, though, as well. So
it's awesome. Thank you for opening all that up. I think it's extraordinary insight into to lessons learned along the way. Love that question. Love the stuff that comes from it. Now, as you know, with our podcast, man, this is, we dive deep. We don't just stay on the surface and get to know our guys. We want to continue to kind of dig and pull out as much info as we can, because the majority of our listeners, Eddie, I mean, these are personal growth guys. These are certainly guys that are connecting with you through this show to take some insight from you so they can be better because of it. No different than you sitting, listening to Don Meyer and taking his info and being better. Same idea. And so I think a great question comes back to, how are you every day, 12 years into this thing, how are you continuing to grow and challenge yourself? Maybe what are some of the routines or hobbies that you have inside of personal growth that maybe help a listener checking out the show?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me is to always try to stay open to new ideas. while staying true to the foundation and the core that has already been established. I like to read about what other coaches are doing. You know, this summer I read a biography on Pete Carroll. I read a biography on Nick Saban. Right now I'm rereading a book I read about 7 or 8 years ago called Overachievement that I think is one of the best books out there as far as performance goes. You know, I think that's a big piece of it. I try to watch sports, but I really enjoy watching the interviews. And you know, in the interviews post-game or on SportsCenter or whatever it might be, the players often will give you a little hints about how their mind is working. Mm-hmm. You know, even a guy like Bill Belichick, you might sit there and laugh at his interviews, but and some of it certainly is for show and to protect information as far as how reserved he is in that interview, but at the same time, his focus on the task at hand, I think, is as genuine as you see in those interviews. And sure. I think a lot of people sit there and they laugh at a guy like Bill Belichick, but I think the more that I'm around it, the more that I recognize, you know, what it takes to perform at a high, consistent level. I think Bill Belichick might be the king of that, and I think it shows in his interviews. As much as most people might be like, gosh, that guy, I mean, does that guy have fun whenever he has anything?
Right. Bill,
he does. He has fun winning. He has fun accomplishing the tasks. And his focus is so strong on those tasks mm-hmm. that his mind doesn't work like most people's minds. And that's why he's been so successful. So I think those are the things, you know, that for me, I try to get better every single day and stay sharp with that piece of it. You know, and you know, the other thing I would say is that my why has changed throughout the years in coaching. I think that's a common thing. I think
yeah.
when you're 22 and 23 and 24 years old, you're kind of torn between, one, you don't want to give the game up and this is a way to stay in it, and mm-hmm. two, you just want to win. And, you know, 10 years later, I certainly still want to win, but I think that the thing that I recognize more in coaching is that, you know, the personal development of the players has become a huge priority. And talked about that win anyway a little bit earlier. You know, how do you get the things that you're doing every single day to be something that player can take with them for the rest of their life? You know, that's something that's changing as far as the why goes. And you know, with that being said, I don't want that to devalue the importance of winning. One bit, finding a way to win, I think, is one of the best lessons you can learn in sports. And I think it goes hand in hand, quite frankly, with, hey, you're not just finding a way to win now, you're finding a way to win the rest of your life and
That's
do
right.
it the right way. So, you know, in trying to develop that piece, there's books out there, and Twitter's great for this. There's little daily quotes that you can find on Twitter in 140 characters that are great motivators each and every day for you. And, so it's definitely a constant thing that I'm searching for. And just like I mentioned, the little things that come up are things that can change my day and can hopefully make me just a little bit better every single day. And I'm always looking for that sort of an edge.
That's it. It's getting 1% better. It's outstanding, Eddie. Now, take us into your career and the ins and outs. And I think the beauty of this question are the highs and the lows. Because I think that what comes from this is when we talk about the lows, dive into how you got through them. And I think it's a support system or it's a mindset or it's a learning opportunity. But talk us through some of the various highs throughout your career and the lows and how you worked through those.
Yeah, you know, I guess the highs for me, I'll never forget the two dog piles we got to have to go to Omaha. There's just not a whole lot of feelings like that. When I was at Virginia, that was 2009 and 2011. And then, you know, we've been really lucky here. And we've got to dogpile two of the last 3 years. And to get to do that in this town and uphold this tradition and do it with a bunch of guys that you've known since they're 16, 17 years old and see them growing up and coming together as a team to win championship, it's a really neat thing. It's a really neat thing. There's not a whole lot of things that can bring people together like winning. So certainly those have been the highs. You know, I'd say along with that, got to go to a couple former players' weddings now. Anytime that comes up, that's a pretty neat thing. Get
sure.
to meet former players and their kids and their new families. And that's a pretty amazing thing to see, you know, these guys that, again, you met at 16, 17 years old, and all of a sudden they're grown men. Mm-hmm. And I'd say the last thing is anytime a guy makes it to the major leagues, it's a pretty special thing when you turn on the TV and you get to see a guy that, you know, you knew him when he was in college, and now he's playing and he's on Baseball Tonight and the MLB Network. There's not a whole lot like that.
Sure.
You know, the lows, kind of along the same side, are, I think we've all had losses that eat you alive. And, you know, I remember a few of those along the way. I think that probably the best way in getting over those is, you know, having those be something that motivates you for the next season, for seasons to come. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every time you think, gosh, should I do this extra mile? I'm exhausted right now. Well, you know what? Let's go, from the coach's perspective, let's go get those 20 more reps. Because I remember that feeling of that game last year, or that game that we had in 2010, you know? And,
sure.
Those losses, they can create some lows. That's part of coaching. And, you know, hopefully it makes you better as opposed to bitter. So it goes the same. You know, there's also been challenges I've had in coaching, by all means, where, you know, I think many coaches out there could experience this, where you want more responsibility in coaching, and you're working hard and you want that responsibility. You want to be a head coach tomorrow, even though you've just started coaching 2 years ago. And, you know, I think for that, I was really fortunate, and I was in a lot of places where my responsibilities that I was at were ones that I enjoyed. I was surrounded by great people, great coaches, and I learned a lot from them. While I wanted to go be a head coach, I knew that I was surrounded by people that I could learn a lot from in the meantime, and I needed to do that at that time.
Sure.
And that was a big piece of that. And, you know, I think there's always going to be challenges. There's nowhere in the world that's ever going to be perfectly 100% exactly what you want. And I think recognizing that the grass isn't always greener is a huge thing that all coaches can understand and learn from. And, you know, I would say focus on those positives that you have in your current situation. That's been something that's helped me whenever I start thinking, gosh, you know what, that program over there, they have a video board twice the size of ours, and, you know, their scholarship dollars are funded better. Whatever the challenge you might be facing is, you know, you probably have something in your own program that is a positive. And, you know, the more you can focus on those positives, the better coach you're going to be. And, you know, the last piece of that grass is greener is that the grass is always greener while you water it. So,
that's right.
You know, certainly identify where your shortcomings might be in a program has been something I've learned. But what are you doing about those shortcomings? Are you sitting there and just complaining about them? And trust me, I've been there before. But, you know, I think the thing that I've learned is, rather than complain, go find a solution. Put that energy into finding some sort of a solution. And you might feel like you're banging your head against the wall sometimes searching for that solution, but if you bang your head hard enough, eventually that wall will cave in just a little bit for you somehow, some way.
Sure. Win anyway. You know, I had an old coach, Eddie, one time say, they're talking about looking for future jobs, and he said, man, the whole time that you're looking over the fence trying to see how green their grass is, you're letting weeds grow on yours. That's, I mean, it's the same perspective. Be where your feet are. I love the fact that message continues to come out in these podcasts when we connect with great baseball guys. So I really appreciate you offering that. This is a tough one, dude. And I hope you put some thought into this one. This is where it turns a little bit, because if we took you out of the dugout, all right, Eddie Smith, you're no longer coaching baseball. What would you do with your life and your career?
You know, that's a good question. My goal is to not ever have to answer that question in real life. You know, I think I'd probably teach. I come from a family of educators.
Okay.
I got my degree in Spanish. I actually, I'm fascinated with language in itself,
nice.
Particularly the Spanish language. But, you know, getting to go back to probably teach at the high school level would be something that I'd be open to. Be honest with you, was my plan going through college, and I was just lucky enough to get hired to be a college coach, and never had to go get a real job, as I say it. So I think I would probably do that, though.
All right, so you bring up Spanish, Eddie. So here's what I want you to do. It'd be the first time we've had any type of Spanish language on the airwaves, on the podcast. I want you to, if you could, just in Spanish, take us through what you're going to do today. First time.
Oh, boy. Okay. Pues vamos a tener una reunión con el equipo para la primera vez en este año y vamos a discutir el plan para todo el año y el programa.
That's why they call me El Queso Grande. That's the first time that's come out. That's awesome. I appreciate you doing that. Okay, now here's another. Keep it going. I think to learn more about coaches, and I know that many of us are so geared towards our program and recruiting and on to the next thing, but there's certainly things. Again, I watch you from a distance, man. I see you traveling all over the joint. Talk through us what some of the hobbies that you have, or even inside some hidden talents that are behind the curtain for you.
You know, hobbies-wise, I don't know that there's a whole lot of hobbies that I have. You know, when coaching is pretty all-consuming from that side of it.
Okay.
You know, hidden talents, gosh. I love country music, and for some reason, when we play Name That Tune, it usually takes about one or two notes in the intro of a song for me to be able to tell somebody what song it is and who the artist is and a lot of times what year it came out. I think it's a very useless but hidden talent.
Sure.
You know, one thing that I will say, though, is that the nature of the level here, it's different than my experiences at the Division I levels, in that there's about a month in the summer where our schedule gets pretty light. And, you know, with that being said, from September 1st to June 1st, I've never had more responsibilities and more to do than at this level. And so what I've found as my own kind of way to try to balance that out is I started really traveling a lot in the summer, and I've gone on some great trips over the last 3 years. I usually take about 10 to 14 days and go see the world. I've got to see a lot of amazing things. I went to the Olympics last year when they were in Rio. This summer I was at the pyramids in Egypt. I've done Italy. I've done Greece. I do the whole, you know, pack up a backpack and do a lot of hiking and seeing what the world's all about and try to kind of stay off the beaten path from the tourist standpoint and see what the locals' life is like. And, you know, that's been an eye-opening experience. It gives me a lot of perspective on humanity. It gives me a lot of, you know, perspective on the fact that, you know, whatever it might be that I feel like is normal, it's not normal for the other 90% of the world.
That's
and,
right.
You know, it's just a really good thing that I've found a way to kind of be an outlet to recharge and rejuvenate myself. And I come back pretty eager to get right back after it for the baseball piece.
Well, if we do put together a Name That Tune all-star team, I've got 80s music covered. I'm going to make sure you've got the country music side of things covered. And we'll see if we can go win a gold medal somewhere. Take us inside the dugout. Take us inside the locker room of every place you've been. Pull out some of those funniest stories that have happened to you that can crack you up even today. You probably told it a couple of weeks ago to a coaching buddy. But give us some of those funny stories that have come out from over the years.
Yeah, you know, I would say one that really comes to mind is there was a player when it was my first year of coaching. And he was a really good high school football player. He had set a state record in Virginia at the time. I don't know if it still stands or not, but he had scored 7 touchdowns in one game.
Wow.
So we had got somebody to call him and say that they were from the Washington Post and they wanted to do an interview with him before practice. And they were going to do some pictures, and he needed to be in full uniform and look as much like a game day as he possibly could. And so, you know, we're all kind of in on this. We know what's going on.
Sure.
Name the meeting point, you know, and it's probably an hour and a half before practice that we ask him to show up. So, you know, only a few of us are there at that point. And, you know, we're out in the meeting place, which is out by the visitors, you know, locker room area. And he walks out to where he's supposed to meet this reporter. And, you know, he'd said full uniform for this photo shoot. And, you know, he had wristbands and taped up wrists, and he had eye black and full uniform and batting gloves sticking out. And I'll never forget the expression on his face. And he's like, "What's going on? There's supposed to be a reporter here." And that was a good one. You know, You know, I think the other one that comes to mind is actually from my playing days. It was at Notre Dame, and this is how long ago it was, but we were in the dorms, and the dorms still all have landlines. And so there was a guy, he was a freshman in the dorms, and he lived on the third floor. Mm-hmm. And so we had a friend call him on his dorm landline. He picks it up, and the friend tells him, "Hey, this is Joe from campus maintenance. We're doing a check on all of the mattresses in the dorms. Can you tell me the serial number on your mattress?" Well, the guy rips all his sheets off his mattress. He's trembling around. Of course, there's no serial number. It's a mattress.
Right.
You know? And so the freshman gets on the phone and says, "Yeah, Joe, I don't see a serial number on this mattress." So, Joe says, "Oh, well, perfect. That's exactly why we're calling. You know, those mattresses that we have that don't have the serial number, they're a fire hazard. What I need you to do is take your mattress down to the concession stand in the basement, and by 8 o'clock tonight, we'll have a new mattress up there for you." So the kid takes the mattress all the way down to the basement, and we are just rolling over laughing,
sure,
trying to escape the other dorm room so that he doesn't see us laughing. He doesn't understand it's a prank, and you should have seen the guy about 8:30 that night by the time there was no leather mattress
sure
there in the bed. He was steaming. So
it's awesome. It's good stuff, man. All right.
Yeah.
Last few here for you, man. And let's get back to really giving some great advice, but also some shout outs to some people that have influenced you over the course of your career. So we always ask the Mount Rushmore question. If you have three or four people that have really impacted you the most and you're going to hold them up on high esteem, who would those people be, Eddie?
Well, you know, I don't know if we have enough time in the day to go through all of the people, but, you know, there's just been so many people that have played a role along the way in helping this baseball career. But, you know, I think I would start with my high school coach, Coach Trainer. He's a Hall of Famer in the state of Washington. He knew the game of baseball really well and really, really taught our group, which was a great thing. And then, also along that same time, I had a summer coach in high school named Gary Larson. And Gary was great. He taught us how to play the game with energy. And, you know, what I always thank Gary for is I started playing for Gary. I was about a 5'7", 130-pound rising senior in high school. And he always believed in me. You know, there were probably some players on that team that were better than me. But for some reason, he liked the energy or, you know, the team piece that I may have brought, and kept giving me opportunity after opportunity to play on the left side of the infield when my arm strength probably wasn't strong enough to play on that left side of the infield yet. And, you know, the experience that I got from that was huge. And just having somebody believe in you, there's nothing like it. So he was great. And then I got to play 2 years of junior college baseball. And Bruce Pocklington was my coach there. He was outstanding, taught us how to grow up and be a man. That was huge. You know, after Coach Pock had community college, I transferred to the University of Notre Dame, and you know, I got a chance to play baseball there for Coach Maneri. Mm-hmm. And you know, to get that opportunity to play baseball at Notre Dame was unbelievable. To get to play for Coach Maneri made it probably 10 times more unbelievable. He was the most detailed guy I've ever been around in my life. He had a plan for everything, and he just communicated the expectation and that plan to us so well, and taught me so much about, you know, performing as a team, how to count on each other as a team, how to execute a plan. And so much of his plan that he would have for us, we have every single day in our program to this day, where, you know, one of our assistants here, he calls it the yellow brick road. And, you know, all he said, he got on board with us a year ago, and he says, "This is so easy. All the players have to do is follow a yellow brick road." And I think, you know, as a coach, that's my goal, is to make sure that the expectation and the plan is styled out for our players as clear as possible. And I think Coach Maneri is probably the one who really taught me how to do that piece of it.
That's cool.
And, you know, I think the other thing with Coach that I'll always remember is he was one of the most competitive guys I've ever been around. He wanted to win more than anybody else. But he never put winning ahead of doing the right thing. And, you know, I think still to this day, that's something that I'll always respect and appreciate about him. So,
sure.
You know, I think the last one I would say is working with Coach O'Connor at Virginia for 5 years, my first 5 years in coaching. I couldn't imagine a better place to learn the basics and the groundwork of coaching. Being the director of operations, got to manage a lot of the ins and outs of the program. And, you know, working with Coach on that sort of thing, he really showed me how those little things influence the whole program, how to order the correct number of uniforms, how to take care of travel on the road, how to manage certain situations that come up. You know, our offices were literally, our desks were 10 feet apart for those years. And hearing him manage situations with players, with media, with boosters, it was just a perfect opportunity and experience to understand how to navigate through the coaching world. And then to get to coach on that staff, it was kind of get to apply a little bit more of that from the coaching side has been great. But I'll say that, you know, anybody who wants to be a head coach should be required to spend a year or two as a director of operations. It's a great way to really get a foundation in the game and understand that coaching is a lot more than just teaching the game of baseball and recruiting the right players.
That's right.
Running a program, running a business, so to speak.
That's powerful, man. That's awesome. And we always, again, we got to close every show, and I think this is where most of the guys listening in really take some stuff home, is when you talk about advice for coaches, when we're leaning on our guest to pull back some advice, empty out their pockets, and give us every nugget that you got left in you, Eddie, what would you offer these guys listening in?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think I'll end it in the way that, you know, I'll end our first team meeting this year. You know, I'm going to sit there today and I'm going to talk about all of our expectations for our program and talk for probably an hour and a half. And I'll spend the last 10 minutes talking about, hey, what's it going to take for you to be successful in this program? And I'm speaking primarily to the freshmen who don't know. And you know, walking through a lot of things. And the last thing I'm going to leave them with, I'm going to say, you know, you're going to be looking around here. You're in a brand new world here as a freshman. You don't know what it's going to take. You have questions about, hey, am I good enough? Who's going to be better than me? Am I going to be able to make it here? If you have any of those questions, how do you answer them? And you know, my response to that is shut up and work. And, you know, I found that to be really effective for the baseball players. I think the guys that, you know, when I say shut up and work, the shut up piece means don't sit there and run your mouth about how good of a high school player you were. Don't sit there and run your mouth about having all the answers. Be quiet, observe, see the veterans and how they're going about their business, and then go put your work in. Make sure there's nobody else out there working harder than you. And I think that can translate so much to coaching as well. You know, you know, the more you can listen, the more you can ask questions. If you're trying to learn and get better and create a foundation for yourself as a coach, the better you're going to become. And, you know, you got to be able to listen to guys who've been around it for a long time. What has allowed the guy to stay in coaching for 10, 20, 40 years? You know, listen to that person, watch that person. Same thing with the players. Certainly coaching is establishing an expectation, but I mean, as a bit of a side note, I always feel like people who love animals are the best coaches. You know, you don't get to listen. You don't have a conversation with animals. You got to listen to animals in a different way. They tell you everything that they're thinking in their body language. And so do players. And, you know, I think a lot of coaching is being able to understand that body language and listen to the players and listen to the team to understand what that team needs. And so I think that's the shut up part. You know, be willing to listen, be willing to observe, be willing to absorb what's going on around you. And then the work part explains itself. You know, there's no reason anybody should ever outwork you. I think if you take that mindset on, that'd be a good thing to elevate yourself and make yourself the best coach you could possibly be.
Awesome. Absolutely crushed, Eddie. Man, we do. We appreciate you jumping on. I know we caught you right before we're team's getting ready to get rolling and the fall season approaches, but man, we really are very thankful that you're inside the ABCA. We certainly look forward to watching that membership come through tomorrow, Friday, September 1st. No pressure at all while you're on the airwaves. But, dude, I really do appreciate you taking time for us again. We appreciate what you're doing inside the game and how you're going about coaching, and love the fact you reference how important your why is and how it's ever-evolving. Dude, thanks for what you're doing. We look forward to catching up with you soon, Eddie.
Well, thanks for having me on. What an honor, and have a great season out there to all the coaches.
Proud to have guys like Eddie Smith inside the ABCA and part of our fraternity here. How about that way to end the show? Maybe one of our better responses to advice for young coaches. Just awesome stuff. And huge thanks to Eddie for carving out some time for us before he headed off to his first team meeting of the year. That spirit's in the air for all of us for sure. So good luck this fall, Eddie. Good luck to the Red Devils, and we look forward to seeing you guys in Indianapolis. Now, staying connected to this podcast will ensure you don't miss out on anything we have going here at ABCA. It's a super easy process, but let's just make sure that that doesn't happen. Number one, head over to iTunes or Google Play, guys. Subscribe to the show. Don't even have to think about it. It's a no-brainer. It'll show up on your phone each and every time we put a brand new show out. Number two, stay plugged into our website, abca.org. If you want to listen through the computer, go to the Education tab at the top. Call us on the Clubhouse podcast link. It'll be right there waiting for you. You can click through those shows. And number three, just give us a follow on Twitter at ABCA1945. We always announce the release of the show and pull different quotes throughout the week, so make sure you're following us on there. If you ever need to reach out to me directly, connect with me on Twitter at CoachSheets3, or you can shoot me an email directly, Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. It's nothing short of inspirational and motivating to connect with our loyal listeners, and we get to hear how these shows are hitting you on the other end of the call, and that is why we keep going, to help deliver this audio gold to you each and every week for your growth, to help you advance your coaching game and knowledge, but it's also helping all of us be better stewards of the game and grow baseball. So thanks again, guys, for staying locked into that. Now, a few things to be aware of here. First is that our hashtag ABCA chats have moved to Tuesdays this fall. We've listened to our coaches, and they loudly said, "Let there be Monday night football." And of course, we did that last year, but we're going to make sure we do it again this fall. We're going to move those chats to Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Same format where we ask questions, our coaches share their info and insight, and we all get better. It's the perfect platform to network with other coaches, plus take home some terrific coaching knowledge in another way that we're working to educate and grow our coaches. It's every other week, starting tonight, Tuesday, September 5th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we hope to see you check in on our next hashtag ABCA chat on Twitter. Plus, our Barnstormers clinics are rolling downhill. We're entering our second month with 6 clinics already down and another 14 to go. Now, these are our one-day coaching clinics. We're doing these around the country, but for this year's tour, we're hitting the Midwest and the Carolinas, working to give the area's youth, travel, and high school coaches an opportunity to learn from the very best coaches in their backyards. And if you want more information on that, head over to our website, abca.org/clinics, and jump on the Barnstormers tour bus this fall. And lastly, and more importantly, a brand new membership year is upon us here at the ABCA. It's only $45, and it'll get you inside your baseball coach's fraternity. We're going to give you back $1 million personal liability insurance policy, Inside Pitch magazine, weekly emails with coaching articles, hotel and rental car discounts, plus so much more. But you also get access to our annual ABCA convention, where this January the 4th to the 7th, we're going to head out to Indianapolis and hopefully join over 6,000 coaches from around the world for 4 days of baseball heaven. And if you want more information on that, head over to abca.org, click on memberships, click on the convention link, and please make plans to join us in Indy this January. So there it is, guys. That's the complete rundown, and another week's podcast is in the books. Thanks again for listening and staying loyal to the show. Remember, this is your show. These conversations are for you to digest and make yourself better just by hitting the play button. So as always, guys, thanks for listening in, keeping the Calls from the Clubhouse podcast on your radar. And until next week, keep growing, keep developing, keep challenging your why inside this game. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.